According to a 2012 report by the Natural Resources Defense Council, as a region, bacterial levels of Great Lakes beaches exceeded public health standards more than beaches in any other region in the U.S. Contaminated water can cause illness and force beaches to close. Yesterday, I spoke with Dr. Joan Rose, the Nolan Endowed Chair of Water Research. Rose explained that Great Lakes beaches are sometimes more susceptible to pollution than coastal beaches.
We monitor water for a fecal bacterium called E. coli.
Yeah.
And that's what we use. And when we test the water, if the E. coli is too high, it means there's too much pollution and there's the potential for people getting sick. So each state has their own standard. And when that standard is exceeded, they put that advisory out or they close the beach. And that's how we get these numbers. And of course, what we're comparing in the Great Lakes, we're comparing the Great Lakes to the other coastal beaches. And so, as you can imagine, this is a freshwater system in the Great Lakes. And sometimes it's just a bit more susceptible to pollution than some of the marine beaches.
What else is in the water, though, besides E. coli?
Well, E. coli is an indicator. It indicates that we've got this pollution. And with the fecal pollution comes all different types of hazards that can make us ill. It includes viruses like norovirus, and that gives you a pretty severe case of diarrhea or vomiting. It can include other bacteria like Campylobacter. And that causes both a gastrointestinal illness, but it can also cause reactive arthritis. And it can contain things like parasites, like Cryptosporidium. And that can make you sick for 3 to 5 days.
How exactly is the E. coli getting in the water?
Well, we dispose of our wastes through wastewater treatment plants or through septic tanks. That's how humans dispose of their waste. Animals, of course, if you've got a big animal lot, you might imagine that the manure gets put on, you know, some crops and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so these E. coli and these pathogens get into water because they either get discharged directly from a wastewater plant. They seep in through a leaky septic tank or through inappropriate soil, or they run off of fields where the manure has been, you know,
spread.
Yeah.
Well, infrastructure plays some kind of role here too, because we do have wastewater treatment plants that are intended to address this.
Yeah, a good wastewater treatment plant, one that is state-of-the-art, will remove E. coli and actually kill it. We actually add chlorine generally in wastewater treatment, and we can kill the E. coli and many other pathogens. But one of the problems is when it rains, the wastewater plant takes in a lot of rainwater. It doesn't work as efficiently, so we have a lot more E. coli and pathogens getting into the environment than we would like. So both climate and our infrastructure is playing a role on how these E. coli and pathogens get into our system, into our water systems.
Is the public generally as aware of the importance of clean water on health as they should be, in your view?
In my view, I think that we've taken clean water and safe water for granted. In the United States, if you look, the Clean Water Act got passed in the 1970s. And so we have, you know, 40 years of focusing on clean water. And so we've taken that for granted. We've taken it, we can take a glass of water and drink it without any problem. We can go to a beach and swim and not get sick. But what we're finding now is our pipes are now 40 years old, and our pipes are now 50 years old,
mm-hmm.
and some of our wastewater plants are over capacity, and we have a lot more manure going onto our fields. We have a lot more rain events. So what we're seeing is what looks to be a degradation of our water systems, and we really have to be more vigilant than we have been.
Back to beaches here. How does the health, if you will, of a beach, does that offer any insight into the health of the larger Great Lakes ecosystem?
I think it does. I think these beaches are an indicator of what's going on our shoreline. And our shoreline is so important to us. It's important for the economic vitality of the community. And it looks like with every beach closure, a community can lose almost $200,000 a day. So it's very important. So it's the health of our communities, the health of our wildlife, our own health as we use the beach, not only for recreating and well-being, but the water quality side of it so that we don't get sick.
Would there be an advantage to enabling, I'll say, beach goers to be more vigilant in terms of water quality?
Well, I think those of us that live in the Great Lakes, we are really fortunate. And what they found with surveys is that most of us really appreciate our shoreline and our beaches. We support monitoring. And I think that those of us that are consumers of these healthy beaches, we can do several things. First of all, we can know what's going on with our beaches. And in the state of Michigan, we do an excellent job. The Department of Environmental Quality does an excellent job monitoring the beaches. You can go right to a website and find out about your local beach. And then you're going to have some knowledge about what may or may not need to be done to keep it healthy or to restore it, you know, restore it to high water quality. You can also do things when you go to the beach. I mean, there's good hygiene at the beach. You know, that you keep your food and your water and your towel and all your picnic stuff covered and closed, and you keep it away from the water. You keep it away from the birds. You pick up your trash. You practice good hygiene, like using the restrooms that are nearby and that type of thing. So all of us play a role, I think, in keeping our beaches healthy.
We're talking with Dr. Joan Rose, who's the Nolan Chair in Water Research at Michigan State University, about beach health and related topics. I'm led to believe that sometimes beach closures happen after the fact, and by that I mean by the time the results of a water quality test are known, people have already been swimming in the contaminated water. Are testing methods improving? Is that improving?
That is improving. I mean, you know, our traditional methods are we take a water sample, we run it back to the lab, and we actually grow up the bacteria. We grow up the E. coli overnight, and then we count it. What we're able to do now is actually take the water sample. We can extract the DNA from the bacteria in that water sample, and we can find out how many E. coli are there in a more rapid manner. And now we can get the results in 4 to 6 hours, conceivably. So that is a big improvement to what we were doing before. Other groups are actually using what they call predictive models because they know so much about their beach and they monitored it for so long. They can actually use the winds, the rain, the sunlight to predict whether the E. coli is going to show up at the beach. And they've been able to get their predictions very, very close to the mark. And so this is also another way that many managers are alerting the public early.
Are there any areas of the Great Lakes region that have a notably long history of poor beach health?
You know, we have a number of areas and bays around the Great Lakes that are just more susceptible. And if you think of the Great Lakes, you always hear about Lake Erie and because it's small and shallow. But we have the same kind of things with some of these bays. And it's very interesting over the last few years how coalitions of citizens have come together to try to address their beach health and improve things and improve their ecosystems in general. Saginaw Bay is one of those where they may have, you know, things like Phragmites coming up on the beach, and then they have E. coli and all kinds of invasive species. So they want to restore that ecosystem for fisheries and recreation and beachgoers. Another one is Lake Sinclair, and they're really focusing on how they're going to improve their beaches and really improve what they call the blue economy. That is, you know, vitalizing their area because they have this wonderful shoreline that they could take advantage of.
In an article you wrote for the Huffington Post late last year titled "The New and Improved Water Cycle?" You discuss how we need to improve our reuse of water. First of all, what is the new water cycle?
Well, you know, we think of the when we're in school, I guess, we learn about the hydrologic cycle. And so the rain comes down, it runs off, it goes into the groundwater, goes in the rivers, goes to the lakes, and then evaporates back up into the atmosphere, sort of cycling, and that water moves in this cycle. And that's very true. But what we're finding is that humans have affected every part of that cycle. We've built infrastructure now so the water flows differently. We've influenced climate. So evaporation is different, and rainfall is different. So all parts of the cycle are very different, and we're seeing this now. We're experiencing this big drought. The whole Midwest experienced this recent drought, and we're seeing more intense rainfall events. So we're seeing these storms, and so we're just seeing all this weather and changing climate, and it's going to continue to change. And under these circumstances, water recycling, because we use a lot of water in our communities, is a viable way to go. And it's going to improve water quality and quantity. They've already started using water recycling in places that are stressed, water stressed, like in Arizona and Southern California, Texas, even Florida, even though we think of Florida as being very wet. They're actually very water stressed because they have a very seasonal rainfall event. And we're starting to see some stress up here in the Great Lakes, even though we have so much water. We want to protect that water. We want to protect our infrastructure. And so recycling makes a lot of sense, even in a water-rich area like the Great Lakes.
Are you persuading a lot of people that there is indeed a new water cycle? Or are you meeting resistance to that idea? Water still evaporates. It still becomes clouds. It still turns into rain. That hasn't changed. But you're arguing that things have changed.
Right. And I think that the scientists, the water engineers, the city planners, at that level, there is clearly a recognition that there's been a change and that we need to plan differently if we're going to continue to have water security. And that means enough water of the right quality for what we want in our communities. So, but I think the next level is getting an understanding of both the science down at the education, like the K-12. How do we bring in the new science and the new knowledge into the curriculum at the appropriate level so that we're educating the next generation? And also, how do we better communicate this science to the public? Because the public ultimately will be making decisions on whether it's bonds or other financial approaches to improving their infrastructure and looking at how they protect their water. So ultimately, we have to do a better job of communicating this to the public.
Dr. Joan Rose of Michigan State University is the Nolan Chair in Water Research at MSU. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Current State's weekly environmental segment is supported by the Knight Center for Environmental Journalism at Michigan State University. You can find more environmental news online at greatlakesecho.org.